We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 150. Initial Opinions brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, and today I'm happy to celebrate our 150th episode with a special Patreon show. Three Patreons, Mike, Scott, and Miko, are joining me today to discuss some of the biggest questions of the preseason and some other news going on around the club. Miko will be joining me later on, but for now, Mike and Scott are here to help me out. Let's start with you, Mike. Where are we talking to you from? And let's break the ice by asking who your all-time favorite Barcelona player is.
Great. I'm talking to you from Denver, Colorado, where I live. And I have an easy answer to this. It's not very original, but my favorite player is definitely Messi.
Well, Scott, now you've got the challenge, because I don't think I'm going to allow you to say Messi. You can say Messi's your favorite, but then I'm going to need your backup. But Scott, where are we talking to you from?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. And I guess I'm a little more historical, although I was not around for this time, but definitely Cruyff, just given the global contributions made to the club and identity over decades.
Well, I think Messi and Cruyff are pretty simple, pretty easy picks. Again, not too obscure there. But let's get it started here today with a question from Doug in the closed Facebook page. What are Valverde's strengths? If we want to see him and the team succeed, what in his past illustrates what that path may look like? So, Mike, I'll let you go first on this one. We are complimenting Valverde today.
Well, that's not too hard for me. I'm actually not a hater of Valverde. So I would say the strengths are the continuity he sort of gives to the team throughout the whole season. I think we mostly see kind of the best team week in and week out. Of course, there's some variations in that. But the team sort of seems to have a consistency that, you know, I think you need over the course of the long season. It certainly helps in competing in the league in particular. I think the weaknesses are, and I hope that this gets addressed this season a little bit, is how wedded he is. Sort of the other side of the consistency coin is how wedded he is to certain players and not giving opportunities to others, and not having sort of competition at particular spots that pushes those sort of anointed starters to be the best that they can be.
Yeah, Scott, what about you weighing in on that?
I would say I think it's notable that there hasn't been a lot of dramatics going on. I think given some of the difficulties they've had towards the end of the season, that there is a consistency, but there's, I think the issue on the other side is that there's not really a sense of urgency. I mean, they really are built for the long term over the course of a full season. But I think, you know, when you're playing the one game that you really need to win and you need to dig into kind of something more kind of deeper and passionate, that seems to be kind of where they get a little lost.
Yeah, when it comes to stability, and that is the greatest compliment to Valverde. But the one point I add, that it's not a knock on Valverde, but in his coaching career, even going back through from Valencia, Olympiacos, and we know what he recently has done at Bilbao in those five seasons there, but he's coached Villarreal and Espanyol for three seasons, and again Bilbao the first time for three seasons. Because he's only spent a limited amount of time at each of those clubs, the third season here at Barcelona, it winds up being, and again it is difficult being the manager at one of these top clubs, and whether it's Chelsea or Manchester United, or now Man City has Pep, so put an asterisk next to that, he's going to get a long leash. But at all of these major top clubs in the world, managers don't regularly last even three seasons anymore. But that said, in his career, he hasn't really lasted more than three seasons many times. But in those times, in those third seasons or even those second seasons, he winds up getting the next job not because of failure. Not often has he kind of been pushed out, or has there been a point where he hasn't been trusted by management. His rise up through has been a slow rise, and not even from established club to the next level, but again, moving from Espanyol to Greece to Villarreal, back to Greece, then Valencia, Bilbao, which you'd say is lower than Valencia, then the jump up to Barcelona. So for the winding career path he has, I think you guys are right that he's always added that consistency and stability that I think has been helpful to the squad and to his mission. And with the kind of talent that he has at his disposal this season, where it's an attack that has got even stronger, how do you guys think the top five at the moment, that being Messi, Suarez, Griezmann, Dembele, and Coutinho, is going to shake out? And if you do think Coutinho is going to play in the would play in the midfield, and if that's a possibility, then you can give me that answer as well. So Scott, I'll let you start there.
I think the big question is, the question is who's kind of the odd one out. And I mean, I think in that situation, you would have to say it's most likely to start Coutinho. But then with that said, I mean, I think there's, through the course of the season, going back to the consistency, you know, there's so many injury problems that I think reliably there will be space for everybody. But I think I'm assuming that there's no more changes going on through the transfer window. I would assume that you would start kind of with a little more quickness. I think you have Griezmann up front, and I think that that's going to be, I don't know to what extent he's going to overlap on what Coutinho's contributions are, but I think you'd want a little bit stronger of a midfield than having Coutinho going too far back. And so I would assume that he would be the odd one out, and kind of he would come in, you know, as needed. But with that said, I think with Griezmann coming in, it's just such a big variable in terms of how, who's going to click with who. And I mean, he is such a great team player in that way. I really wonder if the first little bit of the season is going to be, and especially the group stages of the Champions League, is just really just figuring out who's gelling.
Well, who do you think is going to be gelling the best, Mike?
It's going to be really fun to watch. I think we're going to see a Messi, Suarez, Griezmann line from the start. And I hope we're going to see the best of Luis Suarez, which maybe we didn't see through most of last season. He seems to be highly motivated, back in training 5 days early. He looks fit, more fit than we've seen him show up at the beginning of the season the last couple of years. And he's really the only true number nine, and I think Valverde wants to play that way. There's a lot of options there, and if things aren't going perfectly or going really well, from the start, I could see Dembele moving in with Griezmann sort of moving to the middle and Messi to the right side, or Messi in the middle, maybe in a false nine role with Dembele on the right and Griezmann on the left. There's a lot of things you can play with there. I'm kind of over Coutinho. I think like most fans, I would still love to see him sold, to be honest with you, before the season starts, and for Malcolm to be the fifth guy in the mix there. Mainly, not because I think Malcolm's necessarily better than Coutinho, but I think Coutinho sort of playing that fifth man role is just not going to sit well with him, and we're not going to see the best of him. Sort of how we saw sort of a dissatisfied guy on the field last year, and he's not what he was when he was at Liverpool, or even how he looked early in the season last year. I don't see him in the midfield at all, because the midfield, I think, is already crowded enough, and with guys who are ahead of him, especially with De Jong coming in and Arthur hopefully, you know, having more stamina this year, having a European season under his belt. So I like Messi, Suarez, Griezmann to start. I love Dembele. I want to see Dembele get lots of options. I think there's a lot of sort of formations that Valverde can use with those four, and I would put Coutinho as sort of like a distant fifth in that group if he's not sold.
I also wonder if it's going to be very circumstantial, where you'll have certain lineups for certain situations. I mean, I think Dembele was such a missing piece in that second leg against Liverpool, and I think you just would want to see that kind of in the bigger games, having just that bit of speed on the wing that can really throw another team off. And I think adding Griezmann to that mix, where he's very much that similar kind of player, is just, I mean, it's going to be absolutely amazing if it works.
I completely agree with that as well, Scott. And there are certainly lots of tactical formations that can be used here, and especially with Messi and Suarez both, you know, at 32 years old, we're gonna, as efficient as Messi is, and we know he can play almost, you know, every game, but he's gonna have to start taking more time off. Suarez definitely needs time off. I think we'll see a lot of Dembele, and I really hope we do.
Yeah, the 2 points that I really like that you guys brought up was one, you know, obviously Griezmann being the newcomer is going to be the key, and Dembele, who's chemistry with Suarez did improve over the course of last season, I thought, when Dembele was able to stay healthy and when Suarez was healthy. It did improve, but it wasn't at the top level that I think it could reach. But Griezmann, the way that he combines with Diego Costa and that we've seen that he works with his number nines at Atletico Madrid, the trust that you'd have that Messi and Suarez, that partnership can extend to then Griezmann working with Suarez and off him like that, it really does seem to be that we could have some magic created up top. And again, that's not a knock on Dembele. And then to the other point, that Coutinho in that lineup is a distant fifth. And then later on when Miko and I are going to be discussing the midfield, as you mentioned, Mike, with Sergio Roberto moving into the midfield, that's going to change things up even more. I think that shows that Valverde, by putting now Roberto back in the midfield, I don't know. I think it seems like Coutinho business might already be happening behind the scenes. I think we're done talking about Neymar, as we've said, and it seems like the hitches in the Junior Firpo deal are that Real Betis is either asking for too much money, but that might be because Barcelona don't have the funds at the current moment. And if they're afraid to sell Coutinho for less than they paid for him, well, obviously that's going to be the case. And the one thing that does make me weary and make me think about Coutinho, and this will be the next question for you guys, it seems like in all of our minds that Coutinho is already gone. As we talked about, I think we all agree he is fifth on the attacking depth chart, and then on the midfield depth chart, I don't know where he is because they added De Jong. They added a guy who should maybe be a member of the starting 11, and so how does Coutinho fit into that? But then you think with Real Madrid having this whole saga over getting rid of Gareth Bale, who I can't think of a footballer who's farther out the door already while still being with the club, and then the potential that Barcelona might not be shopping Coutinho as aggressively as Madrid are shopping Bale, he very well could be staying another season just because Barcelona aren't happy with the numbers. But, I mean, that's going to be the big question. If he is even here next season, where is he possibly going to play? And is there any way, if he has less playing time, to rectify that career? I think, again, you both said that you hope he is sold. But if he isn't, what kind of role do you think he can carve out this season?
It's a very difficult question. I mean, that's why I hope he's sold, because I don't want Valverde to need to answer that question. I think any time he gets in the front line, you know, comes at the expense of Dembele, which I don't want to see. I'd rather see Dembele out there getting as much time as he can while if he's healthy. And in the midfield, I like Artur ahead of him. I like De Jong ahead of him. You know, I like if Rakitic is still here, he's clearly ahead of Coutinho. You know, we want to see guys like Alignan, Puig. I think everyone, you know, the Barca family wants to see that. See those guys get more time on the field. So, and like you said, Roberto moving back to the midfield, which I also think is a positive move. I never really liked him at right back as a solution there. So all those developments in the midfield are very positive, but I just don't see a role for Coutinho there. His only role is in the front line, and I think that comes at the expense of Dembele, and I don't want to see that. So I don't know if that's very responsive to what kind of role do I see him carving out. I guess my answer is I don't really see him carving out.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
A space there, and that's why I'd like to see him move on, because you know that just creates tensions and problems within the club as well when you have a player of his stature, you know, with his transfer fee and his wages really not having a role on the field. That's just not a good situation.
Yeah, I think after, you know, after kind of, you know, a few months away from play, watching the Chelsea match, it really just brought home kind of how complete of a front there is and how complete of a midfield there is in a lot of respects. And I look at that in the context of Coutinho, and it's very hard to see how he's going to fit other than kind of in a, not in a filler circumstance per se, but again, very, you know, very situational. But even if he's situational, you know, I think even what we saw with Alignan Puig, like, you you want to see those players play more, especially you want to see them develop over the course of the year. Whereas with Coutinho, you kind of want to legitimize a purchase that was hastily made a couple of years ago. And I just, it's hard to legitimize that with such a great complete team. And then again, with, I think there's some interest in developing some of the younger players. And I think, you know, aside from Dembele, it's not a young attack. I don't know to what extent De Jong would be kind of a similar role as what Coutinho is. I think Coutinho plays a little bit further ahead. So I don't know what role he has. And it's, you know, sad to say that, but then I think you have a contract that goes on for another, you know, 4 or 5 years. And so it's really just, you're kind of mitigating the expense you've already put in. And, you know, do you put him out on loan? Do you try and move him, or do you just try and make him work? And I think another thing Valverde is not very good at, even though I like Valverde generally, is he doesn't seem to be creative with the roles of players in a lot of respects. And mm-hmm. so I just don't know if a new position would be created for him.
You know, Dan, if you'll indulge me a pet peeve for a second, one of my pet peeves with the club, and this is not unique to Barcelona or even to soccer, is these internal valuations. You know, we see these reports, they value him at 100 million or 120 million euros, and they purchased him for X amount and they want to get most of that back. I mean, he is worth what the market says he is worth.
Right.
And if we, you know, if Liverpool or United would take him right now for 80 million euros, which I think they probably would, you know, I would do that in a heartbeat. Whatever we paid for him is sunk cost and it's not coming back. You know, that decision was made. You got to make the best decision now. And in addition, as far as we understand it, I know we don't have perfect information on this. There are a lot of, you know, variables that we would have to pay going forward. You know, every time Coutinho plays a game, he works towards another variable, or we're successful in the league again, or, you know, hopefully win the Champions League. There's bonuses that get paid out to Coutinho. You know, I just think your internal valuation is meaningless. Like, if we can move him out for 80 million and he's surplus to requirements, then that's what the club should do.
Yeah, and with my, you know, as we all know, here's my normal basketball talk for every show, that, you know, when I look at, you look at a thing like the NBA draft, right, where these kids coming out of college, a promising freshman that's only 18 years old that could be developing this something, he's going to be valued much higher in the lottery and selected much higher than the college senior who's 22 years old, been playing 4 years, and you know what he is. And that does hold true as well, I think, with club evaluations internally as well, where, you know, Puig, yes, it was smart to get his release clause so high, because obviously in Spain you could have it triggered and then the player is gone. So to have a Puig, I think it's not unrealistic from the club, not just fans, to say, oh, a shiny new toy. But I think even a club, it's easier, and they should be, as all clubs should, to put more value on their younger players, even as far as what they're sold for, than a player like Coutinho, because, as you said, Coutinho is a well-known commodity. We've seen what he did for Liverpool. People have seen what he was at Barcelona. That is who Coutinho is. He's in his late 20s. Is he going to really change that much? I doubt that. Well, not necessarily late 20s, but, you know, he's been an established professional for quite a few years now, and we'll say he's basically at his peak. So club evaluations, I think, internally, they only really matter truthfully when it comes to younger players, as we even just saw with Xavi Simons leaving the club, and we don't obviously have all the information there. It seems like, again, people quickly want to just say that it was all about money, PSG, or whether obviously it's his agent in Riola, or it's his father who actually commanded a lot of those negotiations, whether it was about money or PSG or whatever it was. But it seems like the club didn't value him as much as they did Ansu Fati and Ex Moriba. So we do trust that Ex Moriba and Ansu Fati are seen as players with greater potential to Barcelona because of the way that we've seen the club financially put their backing behind them as opposed to other players. And I think that does, again, also make us consider that why I think fans are fair to be out on a player like Coutinho is to that same reason, that we don't know what Puig is capable of. And I think it's fair for fans, and fans do this, we want to watch the young players develop, because you don't know who they could be, and you think that they could all be the next Messi, potentially, or the next Xavi, and yes, in the midfield, or whoever it may be. But to that end, Barcelona, the way the squad is set up, is that we have our established vets. It's not like Valverde is going to put out a bunch of young players in their early 20s and expect to win trophies. They have Messi and Suarez and Busquets and Rakitic and Vidal and Ter Stegen and Piqué and Alba, and the core of Barcelona is built still with veterans, so they have to be adding young pieces or Barcelona going to suffer. And Coutinho still has legs, but again, is Coutinho really part of this vision? Can he Can he kind of divide himself through two generations and be part of that transition from what we'll call the old hats in at the club, and comparing that to Elenia, De Jong, Artur, and Puig, who are all around that same age as well. And I think this brings up the point about the changes currently going on at youth level with Pep Segura after all this time. And, of course, his name has been run through the mud for years now. Whether or not he's truly said these things, he's been attributed with behind the scenes saying how he valued players who had more physical attributes, as they say that they do in the French academies and a lot of times in the Italian academies, more than he does the smaller technical players. And again, due to the success of Xavi and Iniesta and Messi, that seems to rub a lot of Kool-Aid the wrong way. Whether or not it's true, it's become dogma, unfortunately, for Segura. But it seems like his replacement, and this might even be done and dusted by the time this podcast is out, that it is Patrick Kluivert who has officially returned to the club, and we'll see exactly if it's in Segura's capacity. And then Victor Valdez has also returned to the club as the coach of the Juvenil A, so he will get a lot of time with the aforementioned Ansu Fati and Moriba. Now, it's a blanket. I'm not going to be too specific with a question. Mike, Scott, Mike, I'll have you go first on this one. What do you think of the changes that have happened this offseason?
Well, I definitely think overall they're really positive. I don't want to get carried away because I think sometimes we have a tendency to overstate, what we really know about the internal politics of the club and, all bad things that have happened at Barcelona over the last any number of years are always seem to be attributed or laid at the feet of Pep Segura. I don't know if that's true or not, but in general, I like bringing in former players. I particularly really like Victor Valdez, not only as a player, but I like in interviews with him. I like the thoughtfulness he demonstrates and sort of his introspective views on the game. He really thinks about the game and thinks about life and, young people. So him coming back to the club as a coach at Juvenil A, I think is just fantastic. Kluivert obviously is a guy who's been around a long time. He's a Barca guy, So I'm definitely happy with these changes. My understanding too is that Abidal is sort of getting more power in this shakeup as well. I think that's also a positive. I've liked what's happened since he sort of got more influence over the transfer policy. I thought we did really well last summer with, in particular with Longley and Artur. So the large role he played, I'm sure in the transfers this summer as well. So overall, I think it's really positive. I think it might be bringing us back to our roots a little bit. I'm not a big flag waver of the Barcelona faith. I don't like, the game changes and we need to change with it a little bit, but overall I like the adherence to the Cruyffian philosophy. And I think that these changes probably, and the commitment to La Masia. And I think that these changes probably bring us back closer to that. And so I'm happy with them.
Yeah, I think I definitely would call myself kind of more of a traditionalist. I think that's something that's always attracted me to this club is, kind of taking a certain philosophy with regards to developing players, having an open mind. I mean, I think Segura and, the state, claims made of statements made and actions done, it is kind of antithetical. And it is, I think maybe one thing that could be said about the modern club, and this goes back to, again, to kind of what Valverde represents and, why certain signings are made and why they're not necessarily moved on, is that there's a strong interest in consistency. I mean, do you want to take big risks or do you want to kind of maintain a certain level of consistency? But the issue with that over time is that you do lose a bit of the identity, especially if you're kind of more on the philosophical spectrum. I mean, this is not a pragmatic club in a lot of respects. And so I think bringing in people who do understand kind of the more essential aspects of the philosophy of the club, and hopefully, again, with De Jong, I really hope that he represents kind of a new spirit of bringing in a more kind of young and fluid style. I hope that this kind of it goes in that direction. But again, we'll just have to kind of see how effective this all is.
Yeah, changes like these are really only ever positive in hindsight. That's just the way things work. Instead of looking to the past, we're going to continue to look to the future. And a question, Scott, we're going to start with you on this. Outside of Barcelona, now this is all of La Liga, the idea, and I urge people to go back to my conversation last week with Robbie Dunn. We did a team-by-team preview. We actually did not speak about FC Barcelona last week. We did a team-by-team preview, basically, of all the transfer activity up to that point. There hasn't been too much more. I think when I have to start by saying Leganés did some more spending, that tells you how few moves have still happened in the past week, but some still more could happen in the transfer window in La Liga. But that said, a lot of major moves have already happened, and it seems like La Liga it's got itself more talented, not less. And with that said, La Liga being a little deeper, everybody's going to talk about the Champions League. The global media, national medias, wherever they may be, are going to talk about the Champions League. Copa del Rey is now different as well. Knockout, again, up to the semifinals, and Miko and I are going to talk about that a little later. But with the knockout format in the Copa del Rey, making Barcelona, it's going to limit their matches a little bit as they enter that in the round of 32, and then semifinal winds up being two legs. But for those kind of changes happening outside of La Liga is going to be that same grind it always is. Scott, again, starting with you, what are your top five teams going into La Liga? How do you think it's going to shake out?
I would say I still think Barcelona is still going to be the strongest team. I think even with regards to consistency of the top clubs, they'll have been the most consistent. I think even on that basis, I still think they're the front runner. I think they're the best club, but also I do think even, and this might benefit Coutinho as well, is that it's kind of another year of a team kind of marinating. And I think while there might be some new additions that have come in this year, I still think that they have such a great core that's just going to keep playing well. Second, I probably going to go, it's hard with Real versus Atletico. I think Atletico, they're kind of they're the highest risk, highest reward of the kind of bigger clubs. But I would say that Atletico is probably going to do better than Real. And then I would say probably Real second. Then I'd probably go Sevilla. And then I'm not sure for number five. I'm going to say those are my top four, which is pretty generic.
Yeah, completely fair. I think Sevilla, with all the changes they've made, they're another one that we spoke about last week, with all the different new players in, a lot of which are younger, unproven, coming from France, or again lower levels. So we're gonna have to see, and lower levels I mean in terms of club status, so we're gonna have to see how they mesh all of that together. And so Sevilla, I think, is going to be an interesting feast or famine one. And you mentioned too Atletico Madrid. Things are going to be different on the field. It's going to be maybe a little more exciting, but it's still under Diego Simeone, so it might not be any more exciting. In the same way, they've lost a lot of voices in the locker room. So for all that Diego Godin last season may have lost in terms of losing a step or just not looking like himself, we don't know what kind of leadership he was continuing to bring. We expected it was all positive to the locker room, and what Atletico might be missing with that. So, Mike, we're going to throw it to you, the same question. You give me a top four, you can give me a top five. How do you think it's going to shake out?
Sure. I also want to echo Scott's comment. That was a great show you did the other day, running through all the clubs. Barcelona, I think, is going to run away with it again this year. I think we're going to go box to wire, and I don't think we're going to be challenged. Atletico, I think, is going to be second again for the third year in a row. I think it might take a little bit of time for them to sort of get all on the same page, but I like what they've done in the offseason, and not necessarily with losing some of the people they lost, but I think that they've replaced that the lost talent very well, and I think they're gonna be a great side. Here's my hot take. I'm not so sure Real Madrid is going to come in third. How about that?
Well, this is a perfect place to have that hot take, Mike. This is a very safe space for that hot take.
Yeah, I think they're a mess. I think Zidane's not going to last 2 months or 3 months. I think a lot of the problems they had last year, and that were evident even the year before when Zidane jumped ship, are still there and really not getting much better. I don't think they've done that great. Hazard's a great player, but other than that, I don't think they've done that well in the transfer market this summer, in terms of, you know, really bringing in guys that are going to challenge for starting positions. They'll probably end up third, regardless. But I think that Valencia and even Sevilla, if everything sort of comes together, like you said, it's a big high risk, high reward situation for them. But I think one of those two teams could challenge for third. And they will probably, round out the top five. And then I would throw in there Betis and Real Sociedad this year, that maybe one or two of them can also be up there and they'll be competing for the European spots.
Yeah, that's a good point. We always talk about, with Valencia having now worked through the Champions League as well, that might hurt their domestic campaign a little bit. And having missed on that, Real Betis and Real Sociedad, focusing just on La Liga, having done all that work to make their squads better, that could give them an advantage in pushing for Europe and even a Champions League spot. So, yeah, that's a good call there, Mike. And a lot of good calls here made by both Mike and Scott. Thank you guys both so much for joining the show, and most importantly, thank you for being patrons. These are the guys that keep this show going. Again, you might hear some stuff changing in the future in terms of you might hear some ads, you might hear some things changing, but for up to this point, for the last, you know, 2+ years, there has been just our patrons helping us to keep these shows, and it would not be happening without guys like Mike and Scott. So thank you to you both very much for joining the show today.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, and I would just also like to say, I mean, thank you, Dan. I mean, I don't think it's very often, you know, you have Patreons on the show. And so, I mean, it's, you know, we contribute as a sign of, you know, faith and gratitude to everything that you and your guests do. And we really hope you continue and all the best success going forward.
All right. Yeah, thanks to both these guys. And now let's hear from Mitko. And now for the second part of our show, I am pleased on our 150th episode, our special Patreon episode, to bring Mitko back on the show. You were all introduced to Mitko all the way back when Frances did our first Patreon show, as well as having heard from Mike on that episode as well. But Mitko has returned to us, and Mitko, as I asked Mike and Scott as well, where are we talking to you from? And let's break the ice as well with you by asking who your all-time favorite Barcelona player is.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for putting me on the show. It's a great pleasure to be here and to talk to you and to the other guys. I'm phoning in from Germany, being Frankfurt. I've been living here since a couple of years and working in the finance and law sphere of economics. So, Frankfurt now is, second biggest hub in Europe for that. And unfortunately, not a real football hub. Not many Barca fans here, but... Well, we have our TVs, we have internet connections, so we can still track what's going on with the club. My favorite player, I think probably it will be Xavi. I mean, it's very difficult to say anyone between Messi, Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, but I picked Xavi because he really mirrors the key elements which made me fell in love with the Barcelona and with the style of play that this club has for the last couple of decades. So I'm picking Xavi on that one.
So if there are other Kool-Aids in Frankfurt and you're actually listening to the show, you can click on Mitko's name down in the description and give him a tweet. And again, maybe you guys can see a game sometime, Mitko. But for now, you're going to be here on the pod helping me answer some questions today. And now with Scott and Mike, we discuss the forward line. So, Mitko, I want to talk about the midfield here. We've got Busquets, Rakitic, Vidal, Coutinho, De Jong, Roberto, Alenia, Arthur. Now, I did mention Coutinho in there because we're just playing the game today of having not really knowing exactly where he'll play this season, expecting it to be the forward line, as we talked about earlier, but it could be in the midfield. Now, I mentioned all of those 8 players. Realistically, looking at last spring, when Alenia had his minutes, we'll say cut down, as the matches intensified, if you will, realistically, you have to pick 5 players to get minutes for those 3 midfield spots. Of those 8 players, how do you think that rotation goes? So I would say give me a depth chart here by Mitko. I'm going to need 3 starters, starting 11, back against the wall. This is who Valverde is going to go. And I guess if you want to answer this way, you can say, give me your 3. But also, if you want, give me the 3 that you think Valverde might throw out there. And then give me the 2 guys that are going to come off the bench.
Okay, let's do it. So my starting 3 would be De Jong, not Busquets. Because I want the new guy who already shown a lot of qualities. And obviously, we know him since a couple of seasons, and also the great Champions League campaign that he had last year. So I want De Jong to fill into the Busquets steps there. There is, of course, a lot to learn from him, but maybe if he can do like 60-40 of the time on that position, that would be great in my view. I know that this is not the most probable lineup, because all the sport journalists and other people on Twitter, they are saying that probably he will be on the left, on the midfield, so interior. But I would like him to see on a Busquets role, because actually we do not have a guy like Busquets coming through the La Masia, and we are as far as I know, we're not looking to buy anyone. So I would really like De Jong to be that guy. Moving forward, obviously, I mentioned Xavi is the guy who represents what I like most about Barca. So it would be Arthur. I remember first couple of matches that I saw this guy that he really resembles Xavi. He really moves like him. And I don't know if you, I don't know, change the hair, change the shirt, then it becomes Xavi in a way, or maybe the little one. So I'd like Arthur there. And I want so it probably would be Rakitic, because he's like Valverde's favorite. Let's put it this way. If it was up to me, I would like to have Coutinho there. I know it's controversial, but for me, Coutinho, he's not a bad player. You know, he's been on the job, of course, having a lot of ups and downs in his time in Barcelona. But I think if we play him the right spot, then he can definitely grow into the role of being this Iniesta replacement that he would never be. But this is why we bought him, right? So it would be De Jong, Arthur, and Coutinho. And there is a lot of versatility there. There is a lot of technique. There is a lot of ball possession and ball movement. There are passes through the lines, and there is also the capability of those guys to break through lines and also go into the attacking play. Obviously, I want to get rid of the, let's say, of the hustlers in the team, Vidal being the greatest one. I mean, he is a great player, don't get me wrong, but I'm not so fixed on controlling the game by not allowing the other team to counterattack. I'm a lot more into the philosophy of controlling the game through possession of the ball and picking the right spot for the pressure play. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, I think Rakitic will stay unless something happens this summer and we sell that guy. Busquets will most definitely play more minutes than I would like to. And I think for the third spot, there will be De Jong and Arthur playing probably 50-50 of the minutes. This is what I think Valverde would go for.
Yeah.
Apart from that, the other two guys get minutes, in my opinion, are indeed Alenia. I mean, we love that guy, not only because he's La Masia guy, but he really showed qualities. He showed willingness to step in, and this is all it takes for me to get to that fourth or fifth spot in the midfield and play more and more minutes. I mean, let's not forget that back then, 12 years ago, something, Xavi and Iniesta, they weren't regular starters at the beginning of their careers. It took a lot of time and a lot of patience, a lot of seasons for them to develop. And obviously, Alenia is not talking about leaving the club. So maybe he has all the three, in my opinion, key elements to break into the first team for a long period right now. So willingness, talent, and patience. I mean, I'm in love with Ricky Puig, right? But I don't think he'll get so many minutes.
Yeah. Well, I think going even back to your initial point of that three in the midfield, and you mentioned a midfield three potentially of De Jong in that defensive midfield role, which he isn't the player that Busquets is, obviously, but we saw what he did with Ajax. Having the mobility at his young age to go pick up the ball deep from, and his dribbling ability moving forward as well, dynamically opens up a lot of spaces for other people. And yes, Arthur, not Xavi. And it is unfortunate that we compare all of the midfields to the peak midfield of Xavi, Iniesta, or Busquets. However, we can define those as the epitome of those roles that we continue to want the Barcelona midfield to try to replicate. So having De Jong and saying, okay, that's the Sergio Busquets role, saying Arthur, while he is not peak Xavi, maybe yet or maybe ever, he does have a similar ability to pace and control a game. And then that leaves, and when you mentioned Rakitic as Valverde favorite potentially being a third regular, or mainly a starting 11 starter, if you will, for Valverde at the other position. I do again remind that I know Twitter will explodes after every preseason match, after everything, about how all Rakitic does is pass backwards. But having Rakitic in the days that he was at Sevilla, or again asking him almost to change his game again for a third time, as when he showed up to Barcelona he was became a much more defensive player than he was at Schalke or Sevilla earlier on in his career, and then with Barcelona, as he changed, he also changed his role for Croatia. And so asking him for a third time to go back to being a little more of a, actually, as he was almost in 2015 when he showed up for Barcelona, a more forward-thinking, forward-passing, chance-taking player, and almost comparing the role he would have to Iniesta and trying to fill those boots, it's a difficult thing to do, but it is plausible and potentially possible because Rakitic does have that work engine. And with Arthur and De Jong, I don't have the fear of being overrun with older legs. And that's the issue, again, of playing Vidal, Rakitic, and Busquets. That's the nightmare situation, I think, for a lot of people with a midfield three, just that defensively there aren't, they're not just going to have the legs. But having two of De Jong and Arthur, and then Alenia potentially being a third, particularly with, well, we didn't even mention Sergio Roberto being in that mix as well. Then you mentioned Coutinho, and I think, again, offensively, that's where the comparisons lie, of having De Jong as the defensive midfielder, Arthur playing the Xavi role, and Coutinho obviously playing the Iniesta role, which makes the most sense. But again, we don't know where Coutinho is going to be. He might not be at Barcelona at all, but most likely he could be on the wing, could be in midfield. There's a lot, again, still up in the air, but trying to fit guys in those positions, again, I think De Jong so fundamentally changes, even though he's the only new addition there, he so fundamentally changes the way the team plays. And me, in particular, I've really enjoyed watching him and Alenia in the preseason, in that first game, particularly. Just the ways that they work together and the ways that their skill sets complement one another, I think is a really bright thing. And for me, Vidal, he's playing this role where he's supposed to have a lot of legs and he's supposed to come out, and he does that. He's, as you mentioned, he's the hustler, but he's also post 30. So as he continues to hustle, how much more is he going to be able to do, and how much more is his legs going to be able to withstand if he just doesn't have the ability to close out and continue to play defense in a way that a guy 10 years his junior might do? So Miko, I think you're right on a lot of different points and the possibilities that are there. And I think it's really telling that I don't think you'd be the only one here that when you list it out, Sergio Roberto entering the midfield this season is really interesting because his forward runs, and we've seen what he can do, and not just in big, big moments, but he doesn't necessarily control the game overtly well. He doesn't necessarily ping the most beautiful passes the way Iniesta did, but he does everything at an above average rate where I don't think you lose that much having Sergio Roberto start in so many matches. So, Miko, let's try to answer a little bit, not an easier question, but a simpler topic, queuing on just one player, that being Lionel Messi. AS is reporting that Messi could be offered a lifetime contract, which, if accepted, would indicate that he would come back to the club or could come back to the club in some capacity down the road, in the same way that Iniesta signed his and left after just 1 year. I'm not saying that Messi is leaving next year. That's not what that would be about. But if he does sign that lifetime contract and he chooses to stay in football, do you see him at the club post-football? And in what capacity do you think a personality like Messi's would fill a role?
Well, that's a great question. And well, it's not an easier one.
No. It's I bring my Patreons on to challenge you guys the way you guys help and challenge me.
let's start with the live contract of Iniesta. I think this is a compliment, or this was a compliment to the guy, humble as he is and so emblematic for the club. And you have to pick the right guy for it. Probably even Xavi would be that guy, but I assume the board came just a couple of years later with that idea, right? To compliment one of the future legends, or even now they are legends of the club, right? So I definitely would think that giving Messi a lifetime contract is something that you have to do based on experience with Iniesta, because Messi is nothing less than Iniesta, even more. He is probably a bit more defining of the stage that we're currently in with Barcelona. So I think offering Messi this contract is a must. obviously, I don't know the how this contract will play out, right? So we cannot afford to pay Messi 50 million a year for the next 10 years, right? This would be ridiculous. But I think Messi is in such terms the right guy, because he is as humble as Iniesta. He is definitely an icon of the club, and I don't think he would like to hurt the club in any way by taking advantage of such contract. So I definitely see the club doing so and offering Messi a contract. What role would he play? I really think, because he loves football so much, he would play a couple of more years, definitely, probably until 37 or something. Well, he said a couple of times that he wants to end his career in Argentina. I'm not sure how this would play out, because he also said like his life and his family, they're so accustomed to Spain and to Barcelona. So probably there is a, let's say, other than football aspects playing part into that decision.
It's a good point with Iniesta and Messi. Obviously, this lifetime contract, when you talk about whether it's Guardiola or Xavi, Puyol, Pique, there are other personalities that have come through the club that you think fill these other roles that are much more in front of the cameras, if you will. But for yes. Messi and Iniesta, I think you never said the name, but the term, I think, or the title would be an ambassador. And I think, you know, having Iniesta at the moment at Vissel Kobe, it's going to bring me directly into my last question for you, but having him at Vissel Kobe, being, even though he's wearing a different uniform and he's not attached to the Barcelona crest at the moment, he's still an ambassador along with David Villa at the moment and Sergi Samper. They're ambassadors for FC Barcelona. I mean, he's an FC Barcelona legend that those in Japan are excited to watch and see in their country. And that, to a degree, that's what Iniesta is almost serving as now, and he's still playing as an ambassador. And Xavi did the same thing when he went to Qatar. I mean, he really just was not an extension of FC Barcelona, but you have this legend of this club in another place. And basically, because he's been so affiliated with the club for so long, anywhere that Messi goes, he winds up being an ambassador for FC Barcelona. So whether or not you have the title of a lifetime contract behind that, I think is, you know, I guess an unnecessary point, but I think as a gesture to Messi's character to offer him that, you know, obviously does make a lot of sense, regardless of how many years more he expects to play in Barcelona or expects to play as a professional. And so that leads right into the final question for you today, Mitko, and for us on the show. Andorra FC, we've talked about this now many months ago, but it's back in the news. A team that Gerard Piqué has a large stake in bought a place in Segunda B with Barcelona Bay, same division, to replace Reus, the Catalan club that was liquidated. It got 0 points, and it's a shame. They're a club with a little bit of history, not a ton, but they have been around for quite some time. So it's a real shame if they, completely have to shut their doors. And we'll see potentially a merger, something like that, with Reus for down the road. But again, their time is going to be done for a little while. But unrelated, Thomas Vermaelen is heading to Vissel Kobe to join the Spanish and former Barcelona contingent in Japan, as we already talked about. And there's clearly a relationship between Barcelona and Vissel Kobe as well. And because Gerard Piqué is a current Barcelona player, there is no actual, you know, headline, AP copy connection between Andorra FC and Barcelona. But if a player of one team has a large stake in a group just two divisions down, I don't see how you avoid some kind of, we'll say, just, you know, relationship there. So my question for you, Mitko, is I wonder what benefits Barcelona would really have in sending players to another Segunda B team or a team in Japan instead of other teams in the first division or second division in Spain. I think I'll give you an out here and ask you basically a yes or no question with, you know, could Vissel Kobe, I don't know how Andorra FC fits into this, but could Vissel Kobe maybe just be a marketing connection? And for Andorra FC, this might just be a PK thing only. I don't know, Mitko. Do you think that this is all some kind of big master plan to, you know, cultivate talent in different places, different locations, and have more avenues to easily monitor our players by sending them to different locations?
Well, as far as the story for Kobe goes, I do think it's a bit more marketing than football aspects. Because Japan, as quickly as they're developing their football, let's say, culture, they do not strike me as the best place to get young talents from, or to develop young talent. I mean, by sending them to develop other young talents, right? I do think they are trying to put even a bigger foot into the Asian market. Therefore, they signed this contract, and as far as I know, they Barcelona would help scouting for Kobe. They will exchange players, definitely, which could be beneficial for both sides, but not necessarily would develop so strong a Barcelona player. And they would also agreed to share tactical meetings or coaching meetings, so that probably, and I'm just assuming here, the guys from recent Kobe learn the Barcelona way, and probably not the other way around. So I do think that the football benefits from the Japan connection are rather small for Barcelona. And as far as the PK adventure with Andorra FC goes, I really do think this is his journey, and this is his way of getting into football. A lot of guys are talking, oh, he's just preparing to be next Barcelona president, so he just wants to play a bit of football manager in real time or something. Maybe this is part of the whole thing, I don't know, but I do think that he is quite adventurous in terms of his businesses, and FC Andorra is definitely a big step for him, great opportunity, great adventure. I think I read today or yesterday, it was in the news, that he bought another club, or maybe just a controlling package, I don't know. He bought another club in Catalonia, which has only cadet levels of players.
Yep.
So maybe he is trying to replicate La Masia on his own by having cadets in one club, sending them to play in Secunda B for the other, or something. I don't know. I don't see how Piqué plays a part between Andorra and Barcelona in terms of exchanging talents and players. I really think this is Piqué on his own, unless in a couple of years he indeed wants to put his foot into the management of FC Barcelona. And then I'm really curious how it will went, because obviously if FC Andorra progresses a bit, then you would start having conflict of interest and all this other legal stuff, but actually not so legal. So it's also basic sense, right, that you cannot wish for the best for two clubs and they compete against each other. But I don't know. Let's see where it goes. I definitely think Japan affair is more into breaking this 1 billion mark in terms of revenues, and FC Andorra is Piqué being a captain of his business.
Well, Mikko, I think I asked you some pretty difficult questions. You got some much harder ones than Mike and Scott, but I really appreciate you taking the time. And just as I told them, I really, really, really appreciate you as a Patreon, and I'm happy that we were able to get you back on the show again. This is one of the perks of being a Patreon. So, Mikko, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks, Dan. It was a pleasure.
And there you have it, 150 shows in the books. Thank you so much to our three Patreons who joined us on today's episode and to help us celebrate the big 150. And thank you to the listeners for supporting us in the ways that you do as well by just listening to the show. And there's a few other things you can do to help out. You know what those are, including tapping in your app and checking out the show notes and subscribing to the show. Finding us on social media on Twitter at The Barcelona Pod or at IltonD13 for me, and on Instagram at The Barcelona Pod, the closed Facebook group, tbpod.link/group, deeper dives, discussions, and fill out those three questions and we'll get you in the group. Again, you have to fill out those questions or I cannot put you in the group. Again, we just want people that are actually serious about trying to have those deeper discussions and being part of that closed Facebook group. And finally, you heard from them today, this is one of the benefits and gifts that you get by being a Patreon. And these are the guys that helped us continue to make so many shows at tbpod.link/Patreon, where you can also get the quick take match reviews. We're also on YouTube now at the Barcelona Podcast. Check us out and hit that subscription button to help us out there as well. So thanks again so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barça.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.